On August 22nd, I was playing a round of golf at Preakness Course West in New Jersey. I very much enjoy playing golf, and over the summer I played a number of rounds. And you end up getting paired with a lot of random people who you've never met in your life and most likely will never see for the rest of your life. And towards the middle of the round, one of the players I was with, he walked off the green and he remarked about how amazing it is just to play golf and for the weather that it was that day. And he turns to me and he says, "There's no place in the world I'd rather be right now." And then he asked me, "How about you? Do you also agree that there's no place in the world you'd rather be right now?" And I paused. And on the one hand, I mean, I could have done almost anything with my day, and I chose to play golf. So on a technical note, meaning, yeah, maybe this is where I chose to be. But on the other hand, how could I say the words, "There's no place I would rather be in the entire world than on a golf course"? And I just responded to the guy and I said, "I hear you." I didn't want to make him feel bad. Like, you know, maybe I really should be in the base measures learning right now. And I didn't want to say, "Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I totally agree. This is the place in the world I'd want to be right now." And it really got me thinking, because how would we ideally want to spend our days, each and every day of life? And obviously, it's not where, with necessarily such intensity, there's no time for relaxation or enjoyment of certain hobbies that one likes. But to say the words, "There's no place in the world I'd rather be right now," really, really got to me. In 2005, Steve Jobs spoke at Stanford at the graduation. He gave the commencement speech. And his talk became very famous. It's very possible you've heard this. I assume many of you have not heard this. And I want to quote from what he said. He said, Steve Jobs, who founded Pixar and founded Apple, he said, "When I was 17, I read a quote that went something like, 'If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.' It made an impression on me. And since then, for the past 33 years, I've looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, 'If today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I'm about to do today?' And whenever the answer has been no, for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something. Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything in life, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important." And when it comes to, so that's the end of the quote from Steve Jobs. And when it comes to thinking about death, it's not necessarily something morbid, but it's a very powerful tool to analyze how a person wants to live their life. You are able to get the most out of life by thinking about how one day it's all going to be over. In the Sefer Noam Elimelech on Parshas Vayechi, he quotes how Yaakov Avinu says, "V'zehu v'ekirvu yimei shalamus," that Yaakov's days were coming to an end. And he was approaching death. He explains, "Perish, Yaakov Avinu alav shalom, hayam achashiv tamis yom emisa." Yaakov Avinu constantly thought about the day he was going to die. Shehu karov v'shem yamus hayom. That maybe it's approaching. Maybe he's going to die that day. V'zehu v'akirvu chule. And that's what the pasuk means. Ratzal omar, this is to say, shakol yamav hayu be'enav karovim lemisa v'al yidei zeh. And through this, through thinking about death, he was able to purify his body, to make the proper choices in life. And all his thoughts, all his machshavos, were extremely lofty. I have a colleague of mine who invited Rabbi Avigdor Miller to his wedding. And he told me that Rabbi Avigdor Miller was known for almost never attending a wedding, not even of his own grandchildren. And he used to do something special for them, certainly, even though he didn't necessarily attend, or if he attended. Like my friend told me, whenever he did attend, he would literally like hold his coat over his arm, because he'd be there for a very, very brief time. And the excuse, the reason he gave, a very valid excuse, he said, I have to prepare for my bechina. And he wasn't in smicha at the time, and he didn't have any physical exam that was about to happen a few days later. But what he meant is, I have to prepare for the bechina after I die, for the ultimate din, the ultimate judgment that I'm going to have to face. And I have to get ready for that. And he lived his entire life to the point where, how could he waste or spend a few hours of his life sitting at a wedding? He has to get ready. He has to, every single minute has to be focused. And the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva says that we should think about death. And he says we should be worried and concerned in a certain sense. You know what? Maybe our time is not necessarily where we're all going to live ad me'ev esrim, and we give that bracha to everyone. But it's not necessarily the case always, of course. And because of that, he says a person has to do tshuva. And a person shouldn't push tshuva off. And he says in Perek Zayin Halacha Beis, Lo'olam yira adam atzmo ki'ilu hu nota lamus. A person has to think, you know what? There's a chance that maybe I'm going to die. V'shem yamus b'shaiso v'nimta ome b'cheto. And maybe what's going to happen is I'm going to die and I'm still going to have plenty of sins on me. Lefikach, therefore, says the Rambam, Yashuv mechetov miyad. A person should do tshuva immediately. Velo yomar, and they shouldn't say, Kshe'azken ashuv. You know, when I get older, that's when I'll do tshuva. What might happen, says the Rambam, Sheve yamus terem shiazken. Maybe chas v'shalom, you're going to die before you reach that old age. You're going to have all those sins in your account. And you could have done tshuva. You could have taken the opportunity to potentially erase them, or potentially, like Reish Lakish says in Gemara Yoma, to turn them into mitzvos, turn them into zechuyos. And this idea is based on Gemara Shabbos and Daf Kuf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Shuv Yom Echad Lefnei Misascha. Rabbi Elazar says, you know when you should do tshuva? The day before you die. On that day, right before you die, you know, make sure to do tshuva, all the sins that you accumulated your entire life, that's when you should do tshuva for them. So, Shalu Talmidav is Rabbi Eliezer, his students asked him, V'chi adam yodeh eze hu yom yamos? Does a person know the day they're going to die? That, you know, okay, let's wake up that day or the day earlier and let's do tshuva. How does a person know this? Amar Lahen, he said to them, V'chol shekein, even more so, Yoshuv hayom shem yamos l'machar. He says, a person doesn't know. Therefore, what does a person have to do? Do tshuva right now. Do tshuva today. Because maybe, chas v'shalom, you're going to die tomorrow. V'nimta kol yom of the tshuva. And therefore, a person should spend every day of their life in tshuva. V'yav Shlomo amar b'chachmoso, and Shlomo HaMelech, in his great wisdom, says, b'chol leis yu b'gad nechal v'anecha, v'sheman al roshcha al yasar. That person, basically, should always be prepared. Should be in a certain state, in a certain mentality. And a person has to be aware that things could happen at any moment. A person has to always do tshuva, which is why in Shmona Esrei, we have a bracha of teshuva. Every single day, multiple times a day. Hashiveinu avinu sorasecha. Right? We daven for tshuva every day. And a person has to think about that. A person has to be able to be realistic with oneself, to hopefully, on the one hand, want to live a long life, but on the other hand, say, Chas v'shalom, who knows what's going to be? And I have to take every single day into account, and I have to make sure to weigh each day, and to use each day properly, and to do tshuva today, because who knows what's going to be tomorrow. The Chavetz Chaim al Torah quotes a pasuk in Sefer Devarim, a famous pasuk, where he says, V'ata Yisrael, Ma Hashem alukecha sholmeimach. Moshe tells Bnei Yisrael, now Bnei Yisrael, what does Hashem want from you? He continues, Kiyam l'yiraso, right? To fear him, l'dafka b'lavosa, right? So the Midrash says that when Moshe says, V'ata Yisrael, and now Bnei Yisrael, what does V'ata mean? Says the Midrash in Bereishis Rabbah, Kaf Aleph Vav, V'ata means teshuvah. So the Chavetz Chaim asks, normally when it comes to a word in a pasuk that's alluding to another idea, a lot of times it makes a lot of sense. But how does the word now, how does that word translate into teshuva? It doesn't seem to go. And he answers by saying that a person's yetzer hara, will try to get him to push something off to the next day, or to a week later, a month later, a few years later. But a person has to think, right now, at this moment, what does Hashem want from me? And teshuva, like we're saying, you can't push it off. It has to be the ata, right now. That's what a person should do. And this notion of potentially using death and this component as a catalyst to make our days more meaningful, it's also a tool to be able to push aside the Yetzer Hara and to strengthen oneself, to be a gibor, to overcome the Yetzer Hara. Because the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Hei says as follows, Amar Rabbi Levi bar Chama Amar Reb Shimon ben Lakish, Le'olam yargiz adam Yetzer Tov al Yetzer Hara. A person, we live in a constant war, every moment of our lives, between the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, right? Like in the cartoons where there's a little angel on one shoulder and there's a devil on the other shoulder, and they're fighting everything out in the cartoons, right? And in a certain sense, inside each and every one of us, that's what it's like. We have our Yetzer Tov telling us to do X, Yetzer Hara saying, no, do Y. Don't do X, come on, you can't do that, you're not that good. You shouldn't do that. Come on, it's not so fun, have some fun. Right? It's a constant struggle. And the Gemara says, Im nitzchu mutav. If you're able to always take the Yetzer Tov side, so that's great. Ve'im lav. But what if you're not? What if the Yetzer Hara comes to you? The Yetzer Hara is strong. And you're about to give in to the Yetzer Hara. So the Gemara gives advice. What do you do? So the first recipe is Yasok b'Torah. The Gemara says, learn Torah. Shne'emar imru b'lbavchan. That when a person learns Torah, a person's able to come to the MS. And Torah is certainly a way to strengthen oneself, to overcome the Yetzer Hara. It makes a person into Ben or Bas Torah, to be able to really, really realize what's important and to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a deeper way, where if a person does it honestly and properly, then a person's not going to want to give in to the Yetzer Hara. And Gemara says, "If nitzchu mutav, you know, and if that works, that's great. V'im lav, what if it doesn't work? What if you're learning Torah and the Yetzer Hara is still there and you still want to give it to it? Yikra Kriya Shema, Shne'emar Al Mishkavchem. You should say Kriyat Shema. And Kriyat Shema we associate with being Mekabel O Malchus Hashemayim. We associate with wanting to perform all the mitzvot, and we say in it, we say, what happens if you don't listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the bad things that are going to happen to us? And here the Yetzer Hara is coming to us and we have to overcome it. So we say Kriyat Shema to reinforce our commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to his mitzvos, and to also state the words of what happens if we don't listen. What happens if right now I'm going to give in to that Yetzer Hara? And im nitzchu mutav, and if that works, that's amazing. V'im lav, but what if that still doesn't work? The Yetzer Hara came to you, you ran to the Beis Medrash, you learned some Torah, still didn't work, you said Kriya Shema, and you still are feeling like the Yetzer Hara is in control. Says the Gemara, Yizkor lo yom hamisa. Think about the day of death. Shene'emar, as the Pasuk says, V'domu selah. That by thinking about death, that is the ultimate antidote to defeating the Yetzer Hara. When all else fails, when learning Torah and saying Kriya Shema is not working, if you think about death, that's going to work. And Pashup Pshat, I think, is that the Yetzer Hara comes, and the Yetzer Hara just wants you to have the here and now. The Yetzer Hara wants to give you the small, immediate pleasure. But if you think about death, and you think, you know what, this pleasure is going to be gone. And after I die, I'm going to be judged for giving into this sin that was so small in terms of its enjoyment and pleasure that I got. But after I die, I'm going to pay the eternal price for it. How could I do this? How could I give in? And the Ma'or of HaShemesh, in Parshas Vayigash, he says, when it comes to this idea of remembering death based on this Gemara, he says, Mipnei ma davka yom hamisa? Why davka death? And he says, "V'chas v'shalom shiyavo bo atzvos." It's not chas v'shalom meant so that person thinks about sadness and becomes depressed over it. That's not the goal. He says the goal is V'alpi darkenu kachu perusho. My understanding is that it's as follows: sheyeh roes hanolad, that you see the future. V'yamod al sof davar sheyeh muchrach levo lepirud. Then in the future, you're going to be separate. Your soul is going to be separate from your body. Hayinu lepirud haneshama hayyule miguf hagashmi. Zehu sof kol adam. This is every person's ultimate ending, that the soul is going to leave the body. Lios haneshama mufshetas me'agashmius. And the soul is going to be separate from the physicality. Lazos yiratikaf ba'odo b'chayim chayoso lavo l'midazu. And a person should constantly think about this in their lifetime, to realize that you're not always going to be physical. This is just such a small part of our neshama, that when we leave, it's not, like we said, it's not going to do any good for us. That's what a person has to realize. That's what a person has to think about. And the problem is, of course, is that we think we're immortal. And we think we're never going to die. And that's why there's so many people that unfortunately don't take out proper, let's say, life insurance, health insurance. And there are people that even if they do take it out, it's a formality, but we don't think I'm going to die. We don't think about that. Even people who are in their 50s or 60s aren't really thinking about that. There's a psychologist at Ohio State University, Dr. Gary Wenk, and he has an article, Why Do Teenagers Feel Immortal? It's from August 23rd, 2010, and he says as follows. He says, 30 years of teaching college students about the effects of drugs upon their brains, and I'm still astonished at the continued attraction of illicit drugs. Year after year, the story never really changes. The reasons for taking psychoactive drugs are varied, but their rationalization has remained fairly consistent. They simply do not believe that anything truly bad will ever happen to them. They're young, their lives stretch out before them to the horizon, and they feel immortal. I speculate that the consistency of this reasoning across decades is likely due to a developmental feature of the human brain. So this psychologist is saying when it comes to teenagers, they think they're never going to die. And that's why they make such poor choices. It's never going to happen to them, they say. But I don't think it's just teenagers. I think we all think about this. We all think we're never going to die. We don't really think about the end. And the Chavetz Chaim has a mashal. The Chavetz Chaim says that when a person, let's say, writes a postcard to a dear friend, so, you know, you have a small area of space to write on. You're thinking in your mind, you start off like, I don't know, you're writing a pretty big font on top. Like, how much do I really have to say to them? Or, you know, I have plenty of room. And you start writing. You're speaking about how things are going. I hope their vacation is going well, whatever it may be. And as you get towards the bottom, like a few inches from the end, you realize you actually have a lot more to say. So what do you start doing? The first trick, of course, is to start making the font a lot smaller. And you start making it smaller. And then you're going, but you're still writing line after line. And now you're at the last possible line. As small as you're writing, you can't squeeze anything else. And you get to the end, and there's still even more you want to say. But there's no more space. And the Chavetz Chaim says, that's the same thing with our lives. At the beginning of our lives, we want to accomplish so much. We want to accomplish mitzvot. We say, you know what? I have plenty of time. Look how long life is. And you start doing a little bit, add on a little more. But as you get towards the bottom, you get towards the end of life, you might be reaching a stage and you realize, you know what? I don't have so much more time. Let me really make things every minute count. And you start really taking life more seriously. But you get to the end of life and you still have a lot more to do. And the problem is that at the beginning, for a lot of it, a big bulk of it, you didn't use your time wisely. And it's a sad thing, and it's a true thing, I think, that happens to each and every one of us. And like we're saying, the trick and the antidote is to be able to think about death itself. To be able to think about how we are mortal. And I had a student just 2 weeks ago that asked me pretty much this question. He asked me, why is it that Hashem made people die? I assume it's coming from a place of, if Hashem could do anything and Hashem loves us and cares about us, then why not allow us to live forever? And one of the things I told him is that when it comes to thinking about, when it comes to dying, when it comes to having a limit to our lives, that limit enables us to gain much more from life itself. In 1986, on January 28th, the Challenger, the NASA space shuttle, had one of the greatest tragedies in NASA's time. And right off the coast of Cape Canaveral, so the Challenger, every single, it was all over the news, and everyone was so excited that these seven astronauts were going to be launched up into space and they were going to be orbiting the moon. And you could see, you could manage to go on YouTube, you could watch, teenagers and adults and kids around the country glued to the TV, watching the liftoff. It was 11:39 in the morning, right, a few hours into school. And there were assemblies around the country for people to be able to watch this momentous occasion of astronauts going up into space. And just over a minute, right after takeoff, there was an explosion, and every person died. And it was a tremendously sad tragedy. And that Yom Kippur, in Tampa, Florida, a congregation, Rodef Shalom, so Yom Kippur was October 13th in 1986. And there was a rabbi, he's not an Orthodox rabbi, but it was an amazing lesson from this, as you'll hear. Rabbi Kenneth Berger said as follows. I'm going to quote from his drasha. On Yom Kippur itself, before Yisker, right when it's fresh, this is the equivalent about Rabbanim, maybe over Yom Kippur, discussing what happened in Pittsburgh this past year. It's still very fresh in our minds. And he says as follows. He says there's another part of the Challenger disaster which only came to light after several months of scientific investigation into the mishap. I believe it's more relevant to the meaning of this holiest of days, a day on which we shall soon recite Yisker. At first, it was thought that all seven astronauts had died immediately at the moment of the explosion. Now it was discussed that death had only come when the capsule hit the water. For perhaps as much as 5 minutes, the astronauts were alive and conscious and yet knew that death was certain. The thought terrorizes me. Can you imagine knowing that in a few moments death was imminent? What would we think of? If, God forbid, you and I were in such circumstances, what would go through your mind? What went through their minds, the seven astronauts? Of course, no one will ever know for sure. But I believe in thinking about this, that our rabbis knew. And they injected three possibilities that a man on his deathbed might think. I know it's not pleasant, but I want you to consider on this Yom Kippur, what if? What if I had 5 minutes to live? There are three possible responses, he continues. It seems to me, and they all begin with the two words, if only. First, if only I had known when I said goodbye to my loved ones. If I only realized what I had when I had it. And as the shuttle falls through the sky, the third possibility, if only I had another chance, I would do things differently. Soon it'll be time for Yisker, and that scene still haunts me, the explosion, and then 5 minutes. If only I, and then the capsule hits the water. It's all over. Then you realize it's all the same. 5 minutes, 5 days, 5 years, 50 years, it's all the same, for it's over before we realize. His drasha goes on much longer. I took snippets from it. You can read the whole drasha. It's transcribed online. You type in 5 minutes to live by Kenneth Berger. And the reason why someone's drasha from 1986 became famous is because 3 years later, that Rabbi Berger and his wife were on a flight from Chicago to Denver, and the plane's tail engine exploded on their route, crippling the controls, and they were headed downward. And every passenger knew this was the end. And the passengers were prepared for a crash landing, realizing it is highly likely we will not survive. Rabbi Brander and his wife were killed. They had a child who did survive that plane crash, miraculously. But here he was, and his brother, when cleaning out his Rabbi Berger's house, and cleaning out his office and his study, he found a transcription of that drasha and how much it resonated. Could be that the people remembered it from Yom Kippur, but certainly, when reading that, him giving a drasha about how these astronauts have 5 minutes to live, what are you going to think about? And how he himself went through the exact moment when the plane's tail engine broke off and he knew, I have just a few minutes to live. We could imagine what went through his mind and how much of a disaster, how horrible and horrific that is. And the New York Times wrote an article about this on the 30th anniversary, just a few years ago. And going through what his family went through in the years after that. But it's a scary thing to think about. And obviously, when it comes to Yom Kippur, when it comes to Shabbat Shuvah, it's time to be serious. It's time to be real. And it's not to depress us, to make us think, you know, Chas V'Shalom, like, at any moment, hopefully Bez Hashem, like, really, mamish, we should all live Ad Me'a V'Esrim. But at the same time, we should take life seriously. And like Steve Jobs, as a 17-year-old kid, how was he able, you might think, how was he able to accomplish so much in his life? He looked himself in the mirror and he said, if this were the last day of my life, how would I want to spend it? And it's an important tool to use. Imagine, like, some people, just day after day, don't do the things that they really would want to do, and certainly the things that they really should do. And we should take into account about what if this is it? And even if this is not it, I want every day to be meaningful. I want every day to be worthwhile, every day to be filled with a good feeling. When I have students, when I meet with students about different struggles and challenges that they overcome, I have a student who has difficulty when it comes to keeping Shabbos. And last night, I got a text right after Shabbos. By the way, on a side note, I'm recording this actually before Rosh Hashanah. This is Erev Rosh Hashanah for me right now. And I got a text from a student, and the text said, I did it. And I said, I'm so proud of you. And I am. And it's an amazing thing. And people must struggle. Tremendous challenges. Whether it's keeping Shabbos, whether it's keeping kosher, whether it's just simple things and the daily things of overcoming the Yetzer Hara, whether it's tefillah, whatever it may be. But we all have our own challenges. We all have our own struggles. And one of the things that I tell students, and I have to certainly even internalize it myself, but I know this to be true, certainly from experience. And I think if you think about it, you'll say it's true as well. Which is that there is no greater feeling than knowing that what you are doing is what Hashem wants you to do. The greatest hana'ah is knowing that's exactly what you should be doing at that moment, exactly what Hashem would want you to do. And the worst thing, and the thing that leaves us with a bitter taste, the thing that makes us gives us a depressive mood, is when we know we're disappointing Hashem, when we know we could be better. And you know what? We can be better. And each and every one of us, going into Yom Kippur, should be able to really assess life and to say, you know, I want to live every day fully. I want to live every day to the max, to take every moment and make every moment count. And I have to take tshuva seriously. But not only that, I want to take every day of life seriously. And like I said, Be'ezot Hashem, we should all live Ad Me'ev Esrim. And we should be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to be able to have full days and full years where we come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whenever the end will be for us, and say, you know, I made every day count. I made every single day meaningful. And we should feel great. We should take pride in the accomplishments of what we're able to do. We should be zocha to have a chasima tovah.